and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts, Dana Osband, here with my friend Chavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Masech Bava Metzia, daf Mem Tet, page 49. So we finally have some interesting stories here that talk about this whole notion that we've been discussing for the last few dafim about making a verbal commitment about a sale or a deal and then reneging on it. And so I'm going to read, there's a couple stories here until the Mishnah, and you're going to do the Mishnah today. So there was a man who paid money for some sesame. Okay. There later, before he actually took a kinyan, before he took possession of the sesame appreciated in price. So the seller reneged and says to him, right? We have no sesame. Shakel zuzayach, take your money back. Lo shakel zuze, he didn't take his money back. Ignub, the money was then stolen from the seller. Okay, so there's like a two-part problem. The seller reneged because sesame became more expensive. And so let's say this guy paid $10 a pound for sesame. And then it turned out that it really was $12 a pound. And the buyer refused to take their money back. And then the money was actually stolen. Atu lakame de Rava. So they came before Rava. Amar Rava. Rava says to the buyer, Kevan de Amri lach shakel zuzayach velo shakit. Since they told you to take your money and you didn't take it, lomi bayi shomer schar delo havi. Not only are the sellers not considered paid like a paid custodian, ela afilo shomer chinam nami lo havi. He's not even considered an unpaid custodian. Amule Rabbanan la Rava, right? So the Rav, sorry, so just before I get to that, so the implication would be is that the seller is totally not responsible, right? Because he told the guy to come get his money and the buyer refused to get his money. Amule Rabbanan la Rava, the rabbi said to Rava, Vahabai le kablue ale misha para, right? So they invoke misha para, right? But the seller should receive the curse of he who exacted retribution, right? That God would exact retribution, right? Yes, it's not right what he did. The seller reneged on the deal. And if the seller is going to be punished by God for reneging on the deal, how could you say the seller's not responsible for that money? Ruluhu, so Rava says to them, Hachinami, indeed they do, right? So Rava's basically saying that the sellers aren't exonerated from the money unless they accept the curse, right? Because if they refuse to accept the curse, right, then they have to honor the original agreement. In other words, if we're going to say that they really did do something wrong because they reneged, right, then they're going to get this curse. They're going to be punished by God. If we say that they didn't really renege, then they should be responsible. So in a way, what Rav is saying is, it's 22. Either they're going to be punished by God, or they're going to have to pay this stolen money. Now the Gemara basically questions, did the story actually happen the way they wrote it here? Amar Rav Papi. So Rav Papi says, Amar li Ravina. Ravina said today, Lidide Amar li Hakumi Rabbanan. A certain rabbi said to me, Rav Tavut Shmei. Rav Tavut was his name. Beimri la Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra Shmei. And some say Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra was his name. Di Abu Yahavile Kol Chalala De Alma. Right? And he was so honest that even if they would give him all the hidden treasures in the world, Lo Habe Ka Mishani B'dibure, he would not deviate from his word. B'didi Habe Uvda. Right? It was with me that this story of sesame occurred. Okay? This is what this Rav Tavut or either Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra said, but the point is that these were very honest people. And what did they say the story was? That day it was evening. And then a man came and stood. And I said to him, let this money be a deposit for you. Right, because it's getting dark. In other words, Shabbos is going to begin soon. Right, and so therefore, take the money and I'll. Hashem, Hab. Here is the house before you. Utiv nu, he put the money in the house, and then the money was stolen. Ata lekami de Rabba, the rabbi came before Rabba. Amrli, and Rabba said to him, Kol habeta kameh, right? Whoever says, here is the house before you, lo mi bayi shomer schar de lo habe. Not only is he not a paid shomer, ela filu shomer chinam nami lo habe. He's not even considered to be a shomer chinam, because when you say to somebody this thing of saying, you know, habeta kameh, here is the house before you, it's like sort of saying, like, okay, you can leave it there, like, but it's at your own risk. And so the point is that, you know, this was a very, very honest rabbi who then, you know, they say in his name that he told this story. Okay. And then Amarle, I said to the rabbi, so Ravina goes on and says, Baha Amrule Rabbanan la Rabba, but the rabbi said to Rabba, Ibaile la Kabule Alea Misha Para. He, the sesame dealer, has to accept upon himself, right? This notion of Misha Parad, that there is going to be some divine retribution. So really the story did involve a reneging, right? The Amar Li, and the rabbi said to me, Lo hayad devarim ba'olam. No such thing ever happened, right? In other words, the rabbis never said that he was actually going to be, you know, that he fell under the category of Misha Parad. So they basically turned the story totally around at the end. And part of it is that it's based on the reputation of the person who tells the story. So I thought this was a really, really interesting story. All right, I'm going to skip the next part, but there's one more story here that I wanted to read. Hu gavra dehavei zuze achmara. There was a man who paid money for wine. L'sof shma dekabai l'minisabe devei parzak rufila. Right, later, before he took the wine, he heard that the office of parzak, the viceroy, intended to sort of take the wine. Amarle habli zuze. So he says to the seller, give me back my money. I'm not going to get my wine, right? Lo ba'inan chamra. I don't want the wine. Ata lekame de Rav Chista. So the seller comes to Rav Chista and says, Amarle, Rav Chista says to him, keder shetiknu meshicha b'mokrin. The same way the rabbis instituted meshicha, right? That you have to pull the object towards you for the seller. So to make the actual kinyan, so that the seller can renege until the buyer takes the merchandise. Kach tiknu meshicha belukuchot. So too, they institute meshicha for the buyer. The buyer can renege also until he takes the merchandise. So the buyer was within his rights to basically the money to be returned. So, and the point here is that this buyer is not subject to Misha Parah either. So it's interesting to see after yesterday's stuff where it really seemed like, you know, there was a lot of discussion of this notion of Misha Parah. Here we have two stories that seem to involve a reneging. And yet, you know, from the second retelling of that first story and the retelling of this story, the reneging seems to be okay.
I think it's a strange, difficult thing, right? When do we apply Misha Parah? When do we not? And in fact, do we apply it at all? Or is it simply this warning? And then either God will take retribution or not, right? Like, that's kind of the beauty of the Misha Parah, that it's a reminder to people, you know, be on your best behavior because you never know when retribution might come for you. But on the other hand, no human being is doing it. So that's the beauty of it, right? Like, it's just a reminder or
it's just interesting
a fear tactic.
You know, yesterday's staff was so strong about this Misha Parah. And now they come with these two stories that kind of undermined it a little bit.
Right. Because it's exactly this question. Is it there to scare you? Because if it's going to scare you and then we come and say, oh, it's not such a big deal, then it's not working. I mean, it doesn't have the chance to work. It's an interesting thing, Misha Parah. Okay. And I'm sure, I betcha there's dissertations or scholarly papers written about it because it certainly is prominent enough to get that kind of attention. And worth our attention as well. Okay, next, Mishnah, new Mishnah. Now, we're talking about Ona'a. Ona'a is, we could translate it as exploitation. We could treat it as fraud, right? Ona'a arba kasef mi esrim arba kasef lesela. So what happens if we have a person who says he was taken advantage of, that's another way to translate it, right? For 4 silver ma'a from the 24 silver ma'a in a seller, which is the same as saying it's a sixth of the transaction. Shtut lemekach, shtut rather lemekach. So we have here, you know, somebody saying that he's out X amount, literally 1/6 of the transaction from what he should have received. Ad matay mutar lachzir? Until how long, right, is it permitted for the customer, for the buyer, to return that item? Ad kadesh yireh letagar o lekorvo. Right, so he says he can only have the time that it would take to allow him to show that the thing that he's purchased, right, to a merchant or to a different relative, let's say, who knows the market, right, and can say, you know, this is not a good this is a problem of ona'ah, this is a problem of exploitation, you're being taken for a ride, right? The more time that goes by, then he can no longer return it, because it's like saying, well, you kind of accepted that this was off, right? That you don't get that sum back if you don't bring the claim soon enough. So Rabbi Tarfon issued a ruling in, or a teaching rather, in Lod, namely Haona Shmona Kesef Miyasrim Va'arba Kesef L'Sela Shlish L'Mekach. Rabbi Tarfon's definition here of ona'a, of this exploitation or taking advantage of someone, is if you have 8 silver ma'a from the 24 silver ma'a of one sela, which means that you're dealing with 1/3 of the transaction, meaning that's a much more, depending on how you look at it, it's either more generous or more stringent as compared to the 1/6 of the transaction, right? At what point do you say this is ona? This gives you more room before you get there. Shlish l'mekach, v'samchu tagare lod. And the merchants of Lod rejoiced, right? Meaning it gives them a greater profit margin, right? They don't have to worry about people coming back to them with complaints quite as often, right? Amar Lahem, so Rabbi Tarfon says to them, to the merchants of Lod, Kol hayom mutar lachzor. And he says, nah, but people can return the entire day. Meaning that idea that you only have a fairly narrow window to come back to the merchant and say, listen, you're taking advantage of me, is... they don't have that narrow window. They have the customer has the entire day to walk back the transaction. And, you know, that's perhaps less to the advantage of the merchants from Lod. Amru lo, so then they say to him, Yaniach lanu Rabbi Tarfon bimkomenu, v'chazru l'divrei chachamim. And so they say, enough Rabbi Tarfon, meaning let us go back to the way we were. We'll take that 1/6, which gives us less profit margin, and it's a greater concern that people will come, you know, the people won't necessarily be able to come back, and it'll be complaining, it'll be a headache, and so on. But in the meantime, they have that narrow window, which they determine is better for them than the greater profit margin of the 1/3. They want the 1/6, and so they go back to the chachamim position, meaning the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, that first view. Okay. Why Rabbi Tarfon says this and so on is not really going to be discussed yet in the part that I want to talk about today. But of course, that is part of the question. Okay, so the Gemara picks up on all this to elaborate, of course. Itamar, Rav Amar Shtut Mekach Shaninu, Shmuel Amar Shtut Ma'ot Nami Shaninu. So we have a dispute here between Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel are Amoraim. They are known for their disputes, and we generally say that Rav, we follow Rav in matters of Isser V'Heter, right? Things that are permitted or prohibited, and very often we follow Shmuel in issues of Mamon, of property, which is this kind of dispute, technically, right? Although we're not going to have a conclusion at this point of the Gemara. So Rav's position, right, is that we're talking about 1/6 of the transaction, right? Meaning 1/6 of the purchase item, as opposed to 1/6 of the money paid. Shmuel says, well, you can focus also on exploitation when it comes to 1/6 of the money paid, right? The difference being, like, this is a matter of, you know, take out your pencil and paper. We're going to deal with the math of what constitutes a sixth. And are you talking about the mekach, the actual transaction, where 1/6 of it is, you know, too much, let's say, for what you should be paying? Or, and that's a matter of like what you're claiming that the item is worth, or let's say there's an actual agreement by the seller to to pay that, but then we're still dealing with it 1/6 of the money paid. This is the disparity, let's say, right, between what something is worth and what people are willing to try to charge and what people are willing to pay. So the Gemara goes on to say as follows. Shave shita b'chamsha, shave shita b'shiva. Let's say you say that you have an item that's worth six, and you're going to sell it for five, right? If it's worth six, and you're going to sell it for five, then that's, right, we're going to do the math to figure out where do you get the 1/6 of ona'ah that's going to constitute exploitation. Likewise, you say shave shita b'shiv'ah, you take the thing that's worth six, but you sell it for seven, right? In either direction, you end up with a differential, I don't know if that's the right word, a difference, right, in the math here, that leaves the discrepancy is going to be considered ona'a. It's going to be considered a matter of exploitation or taking advantage of the customer and so on. Kule alma lo plige debater mecha chazlinan. Everybody agrees that we follow the transaction. The ona'a havya, and it is considered exploitative. Ki plige, where do they dispute? Where is this discussion between Rav and Shmuel? What's the case? If you have an item, shavei chamsha b'shita, you have an item that's worth five ma'a, and it sells for six. V'shavei shiv'a b'shita, or you have an item that's worth seven that sells for six. Meaning, it's the numbers are a little bit different. If you look at it very carefully, it says an item that's the case where nobody disagrees. Everybody agrees. The item is worth six, and it sells for five. Or it's an item that's worth six and it sells for seven. The disagreement is if the item is worth five and it sells for six, or it's worth seven and it sells for six, meaning which direction are you going, from the five to the six or the six to the five? And as the Gemara goes on, which we're actually not really going to discuss now, in the interest of time, we do see that the fractions here, right, in the discussion between Rav and Shmuel, it becomes a little bit clearer where they're coming from, how you get to this 1/6 of a transaction. I kind of wish they had stuck with 1/3, even though the merchants of Lod would not have liked it, just because the math is a little bit easier to eyeball, right? Meaning the difference between 1/6 and 1/3 in the way we can just kind of talk about the numbers here. If you're running a business, you're going to pay very careful attention to where you're going to end up with any kind of discrepancy and when it's going to be considered, you know, the cost of doing business and it's legitimate, and when it's going to be considered enough of a discrepancy that there's ona'ah, that it's considered exploitative or taking advantage of the customer. I will note that the big example that's kind of always given as something that should be exploitative and yet is not is the sale of perfume, right? Because perfume, the prices can be astronomical as compared to what it costs to make the perfume. I suppose that you can say, well, it goes into the expertise of blending the scents and so on. But at the end of the day, people know that what they're paying for is a vast increase, right? A vast markup as compared to the actual cost of what goes into that bottle. And everybody kind of goes along with it. And so then it's not considered ona'a. But this kind of thing in the marketplace, the merchants of Lod, what are they trying to do, right? The issue is when they're entitled to some level of markup, that is the cost of doing business. If they go too far, then that's considered exploitative and they can be taken to court and the customers are going to come back and they're going to complain, but they have to complain within that window of time, right? So there's a certain amount of protection here, which is the whole point for the consumer, and also a measure of protection for the customer, for the seller, to make sure that, you know, as long as he's not price gouging like perfume seems to do, but real price gouging is, you know, it's so obvious, I think, that they would lose the sale as opposed to taking it home to consult with somebody who knows better and then they can bring it back quickly.
I mean, in a way, what this mission is discussing and how it's protecting the consumer, it's almost like the halachic version of the better business bureau, right? Like, if you have a complaint about how somebody is conducting their business, this is, you know, it's halachically, how are those things enforced? And I think it acknowledges that there does need to be some oversight with sellers. Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF and our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.